Okay, welcome to the podcast for Empathy and Imagination. This is the show where we discuss various topics and learn to empathize and imagine with you, each other, and our guests. Welcome back, episode 13. My name is Aubrey.
And I am Drew Clark.
And we have a special guest today, which we'll get to. What's up first? You want to do a garden update?
Garden update.
All right. Garden update. What do you got going on, Drew? I don't have much of an update.
Okay. Well, we got a pretty hefty one. So here in the garden, here in Richmond, we've added a bunch of new plants as of yesterday. We got a whole bunch of new fencing. We planted a bunch of seeds and we moved a bunch of soil. We ended up de-weeding. We pulled out a bunch of the grasses that have been sitting there, and my neighbor and my partner and myself spent hours out there yesterday, 4:20, working in the garden. It was really great. So now we have a bunch of new squashes. We have a bunch of new vegetables and a whole new lettuce bed. A whole series of about 12 new lettuces.
Huh. All the same species?
No, we got an iceberg and we got a purple... Romaine and a purple kind of lettuce also.
Nice. What is the little, I'm looking at a little teepee type thing?
Yeah, we built the, it's all for the beans we just got. So we took some of that bamboo and we bound it all together with steel cable. And we have beans growing up as well as a brand new basil plant that I was just gifted.
What kind of beans? Human beans?
Human beans. We're doing human beans climbing up the pole. I forget. My darling partner, she selected the kind of beans, and then we built a little teepee together.
Nice.
So it's getting pretty producey. You know, we've made a lot of investment in here, and it's looking good. Post a picture.
Yeah. It is looking good.
So your garden is same stats? Anything?
Same stats.
Anything new?
I kind of put up this barrier of bamboo shoots around one of the planter boxes.
There we go.
To prevent one of the intrepid cats from... defecating on my kale.
Ah.
So it's kind of funny. It's like this, it just looks like a trap. It's like this these bamboo shoots all around it, and there's these chains over the top of it. And seems to be working so far. So yeah, still waiting for the seeds to sprout. We got kale, squash, green pepper, and jalapenos, mint.
Hmm.
And yeah, I'm also growing some stuff inside.
Oh.
Concurrently. Some of the same stuff, but I'm going to try to see what works best, growing them inside first or growing them outside.
Science, that's smart.
Yeah.
If you can see right here, I have some kale plants that are reaching 7 feet tall. And my hope is to gift you some of those seeds from that monster when they're fully ready.
Yeah,
and
that'd be great.
Start some of those over into your end.
That'd be great, man.
Cool.
Cool. I think that's our garden update.
Wait, no, there's more.
Oh.
We closed down our compost because it was full, and I dug out and started a new one. So we have a whole second compost going now. That's it.
Huh. Cool. All right.
Garden update.
Any gradient update? Do we have...
You know, the last episode we had that phone call right before. We got that dashing news. And you know what? Since then, I've been trying to work on getting into a meeting with the owner of the building of the place called Pachizo's Telegraph in Berkeley. And we're now considering... what are the possibilities as far as that location for Gradient's grand opening.
Pachizo's.
Pachizo's is this Mediterranean buffet-style place. And they have good food, but their place is very dirty. No offense. And there's like bugs and film on the glass and stuff. So we'd have to go in there and clean it up quite a bit. But they have great food right now.
Hmm. Oh, they're still open?
They're still open.
Huh. But they're looking to sell?
They're looking to sell. But that's like kind of a secret. But it's not really a secret. Because, yeah. So yeah, that's generally the gradient update.
Cool.
I have a question for you, sir.
Yes.
I want to talk to you about At Land.
Oh, yeah.
How's that going? What's that project? Where are we at there?
It's going well. I have yet to put up the website, but I did post on Craigslist for call for submissions. Mm. Atland is my little literary magazine, if you want to call it that. And just looking for submissions of any kind, fiction, nonfiction, memoir, poetry. I'm an avid reader and writer. And, you know, it's just a fun hobby. So, yeah, it's kind of in its beginning stages. But, yeah, more next time.
Nice.
Yeah. Thanks for asking.
You're welcome.
So, Drew, you want to introduce our special guest?
Okay, everybody. We're introducing my mom, Donna Evans, is here in the house tonight. And she's very graciously drove down from Central Oregon for some family events. So why don't you introduce yourself, say hello, and tell us where you're from, a little bit about yourself. Go right ahead.
He didn't tell me that part. He introduced me. I'm his mom. Been there for a long time.
Good one. So where do you live?
I live in Redmond, which is smack dab in the middle of Oregon, a very small town, much larger than when we moved there, but still very small for Bay Area standards.
Cool.
And it's just a wonderful place to live, lots of wide open spaces and fresh, clean air and gorgeous mountains, and it's very nice.
How's the traffic over there? How's it like?
Huh? What?
How's the traffic over there?
We don't have any.
Oh. Redmond, Washington?
Oregon.
Oregon.
Redmond, yeah, no Oregon. Traffic. Yeah, write that down.
We make notes.
Yeah, no traffic. Also, there is, to be fair, there is a dearth of restaurants.
Hmm. A dearth.
Yeah.
Meaning none.
A vacancy.
A paucity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we cook a lot.
Hmm.
But... That's something we miss. And the ocean. Miss the ocean a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's about 4 hours away.
Do you indulge in the delights of Bay Area cuisine when you're here in an eating out kind of a way because there's not much there?
Yes, we do a lot of eating out when we're here. There's really no Chinese food there. We don't even have an Italian restaurant. I mean, it's a steak and potatoes kind of town. In fact, Redmond was... the potato capital of the state for a lot of years. They had an actual potato festival with a queen and a king, and it was, you know, a big deal. And lots of ranches around there, so that's kind of their wheelhouse for eating.
A lot of four-wheel drive vehicles in the area.
Yes, you have to think about if you see anyone that has a car.
Yeah, they're probably from the outside.
So it's kind of a rural area?
It is rural, but our primary industry is tourism. So you can usually spot the tourists.
Mm-hmm. What is so appealing?
There's so much to do. Okay. In the winter, there's all the skiing activities on Mount Bachelor, on Hood, on Hoodoo. There's climbing at Smith Rock. It's a world-class climbing area. Hmm. I don't remember the exact numbers. There's probably 30 golf courses within a few miles. There's fly fishing on all the rivers and lakes around.
There's hiking.
Hiking.
Very lots outdoorsy.
Of biking. Lots of
it's very
biking
outdoorsy.
To do out there.
Lots of bike paths. There's open areas where people like to go on those little four-wheeler things.
Mm-hmm. And now beer. Beer is now exploding out from Bend into Redmond. It's happening.
Yes. Beer is huge. Hmm. You've probably heard about everything that's going on in Bend. And, mm-hmm. of course, Andrew's been there, and we've been to a lot of beer places. And it's become quite common. You open the paper. Oh, good. Another brewery.
Cideries, too, right?
Cideries. And
they're called cideries.
Mm-hmm. And we also have, I think, now 5 distilleries.
So ethyl alcohol is a favorite of Oregon.
Hmm.
We like the Bend Distillery, which is actually between Bend and Redmond, where they make Crater Lake vodka, gin, rye. And something else. Oh, they make some flavored vodkas that are really fun. They do a wonderful tour and a whole big tasting room. It's all free. And it's just, it's a fun place to take people. Very pretty setting. And they pride themselves on their gin, that everything in it is grown on the property.
Hmm. Juniper being the main flavoring juniper, agent?
Yes, yeah. The main flavor.
And juniper grows wildly in Central Oregon.
It's basically a large weed.
Yeah.
And that's what they use to make gin?
You flavor vodka with juniper to make gin.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's right. And they make a different variety of gin. They say it's more the English style. It has a lot more botanicals in it, different flowers and herbs and stuff. Mm. It tastes sort of like biting a mouthful of grass.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So are you kind of a beer drinker?
I'm not. I know. It's sad, all that beer around me, and I'm really not.
Mm. Well.
Well, more for us then.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's this really special opportunity that we have you here on the show, and I really want to acknowledge you for coming on and coming all the way down here. I really appreciate you. So thank you.
You're welcome.
This is such an opportunity to hear to talk a little bit about like the city you were born in, and kind of I want to hear a little bit about you growing up into what your professions became, into what that sort of blossomed into.
That always, when I say it, it always sounds sort of boring. It sounds like a resume, but...
Well, you have the job.
You get to be my mom.
Yeah, I have that job. I worked... I really wasn't all that excited about working. And yeah. A lot of people I knew were just so excited to start their careers. But I was just sort of worked. But, you know, there was always parts of jobs that were good, interesting, beneficial, or you learned something or whatever. But I worked at Wells Fargo Bank for 5 years. I learned a lot because I was very young at the time, very early 20s. And I learned a lot of patience, a lot of working with old people, because we were downtown Palo Alto, and it was a, you know, an older community nearby, and it was on the, you know, the cutting edge of what banking is today, because while I was working there, they invented this thing called an ATM.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
And they also invented this concept called direct deposit.
Ooh.
Huh.
So these were huge steps in banking.
Because before that, everyone had to take their paychecks into you and go deposit this.
Yeah, Fridays were nuts.
Yeah.
I have a pet peeve about ATM.
What is it?
People tend to say ATM machine, which is redundant.
Of course it is.
It's like PIN number is redundant too. Mm-hmm. So everybody listening, it's just ATM and it's just PIN.
You're right.
That's
you're right.
Your number.
We don't want to dilute the language.
Thanks, Aubrey.
I guess you could say AT machine.
But it's like Federal Express. They have that now.
It would be like saying compact CD disc. Doesn't make a lot of I guess it makes sense, but yeah.
No, I get it. You're totally right.
So are you a California native?
Yeah, born in Redwood City? San Mateo. Oh, huh. Grew up in Menlo Park, went to Menlo Atherton High School. Just kind of hung out in Redwood City for a lot of years.
So this is going to air several times over several years for several generations across over the country, so they won't know exactly when your age now. What year did you graduate high school?
1971.
Nice. Okay.
I'll skip some of the little ones. I worked at SRI, which is an offshoot, a research institute, is an offshoot of Stanford University. Mm. I worked there for about, about 5 years. My father worked there for most of his career. He worked there 33 years.
And he made stuff with metal?
He was a model maker and machinist.
Nice.
He worked on things even related to the space program and all that.
So most of my made stuff that went into space?
He did.
It's pretty neat.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He'd have engineers and scientists all come to his shop and say, I need a metal thing. It has to, and they draw a little picture. It has to be this big, and this part has to be round, and it has to fit into this, and you know, it has to do this function. And okay, and he'd make one.
Wow.
Hmm.
Because he didn't like the idea of just being a machinist where you just stamp out the widget, same widget all day long. He said he'd go nuts. He liked the creative part of it. So. Yeah.
And he had those big tools at home for years,
yes,
too, when I was a kid.
When they closed that one, the building that he was in originally, moved into the other building, they sold off some of the old equipment. And we ended up with this giant, what was it? What was the thing he bought? It wasn't a lathe. It was a...
drill press.
I don't think so, but okay.
I just remember it was gigantic and had like a big arm and could cut a hole in anything.
Yeah. We had to pay someone to run in the more powerful amount of electricity to run it, because you couldn't just plug it in an ordinary outlet.
Right.
So my my career gaps were filled with having babies. So after Andrew was born, I went to work at Stanford University, and I stayed there more than 20 years.
And did you stay there because you had another kid? Or would you have left? Would you have done other things if you didn't have kids?
If I didn't have children?
Good question.
That's pretty hard to answer because I did. Yeah. I did have children.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But I did enjoy my time at Stanford. It was always interesting. I felt very respected by all the professors because I worked always in an administrative capacity, and I did the things they didn't know how to do or couldn't do or just completely baffled by, but still had to get done.
Such as?
Well, one of them would give me his letters, and he'd say, he couldn't even figure out, I'm going to really date myself, which end of the envelope to put in the typewriter to have it come up the right way, right. So he's putting on the address correctly.
Right.
So he would print his letters out twice. He'd cut out the address line with scissors and tape it to the front of the envelope. So, I mean, that's just a small example, but arranging...
making it work. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he made it work. It was, they're smart people. Mm-hmm. They just did kind of a workaround, but, you know, preparing tests... applying for grants, writing papers, arranging travel, arranging for visitors. I got to give tests once in a while. I always thought that was fun. And I worked in several different departments, and they were all interesting, and I learned so much. But for me, the fun part of Stanford is all the other things it has to offer. As a child, I would ride my bike over to Stanford, and we would just play.
That's what I did.
I know. We just play.
Huh.
You'd go to the amphitheater where they had all the concerts and stuff, and you'd play, or you'd go to the student union and buy a Coke and go bowling for 50 cents, or, you know, you'd just wander around, and they'd have, you know, rotating statues and art exhibits, and just all kinds of things are going on. There's always concerts and sports, and so to work there in that in a creative environment with lots of things to offer was pretty good. And a lot of the professors had, like, season passes to sporting events or other types of events, and they always, you know, couldn't always go. Here, I can't go. You want to go? Sure. So working there was very interesting.
So would you say that you retired after Stanford?
No, after Stanford, directly after that, we moved to Oregon. We just got tired of all the traffic and all the smog, and just it took forever to do anything, and the crowding, and we just felt very suffocated and wanted something different.
Need some more space.
So we moved to Oregon, and I started researching something I'd always been interested in. And then I found a job with a professional organizing company.
Yeah.
Which I loved. That was so much fun. That's like a topic
I've got.
Professional organizing?
Yeah, professional organizing. That's something I'd like to hear more about your experience of.
I'm not sure I know exactly what that is.
Maybe you could tell us, Mom.
A professional organizer is someone that comes to you and helps you with an area in your life that's giving you grief, that's causing you problems, that's causing you stress. It can be anything. It can be, I open the kitchen cupboards and everything falls out on the floor. Or I can't get anywhere on time. Or the garage is a mess. Or I need you to help me throw this giant party.
That's cool. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I went through a lot of training, and it was fascinating. I loved it because I've always been organized. You had to be organized to keep track of all these professors, because rarely I work for one. I'm usually working for three or four,
right,
and keep track of their whole lives and arranging big events at Stanford. Like I did the entrepreneurial conference each year, 500 attendees. lots of speakers. I met Jeff Bezos. You probably heard of him.
Yeah.
I met Meg Whitman, Jerry Yang. This was, you know, in the 90s, and these were all up-and-coming companies. It was fascinating. But
does any particular professional organizing job stand out as really unique?
They're all unique in their own way.
Do you ever have to use empathy or imagination?
Oh, yes, because you're trying to imagine how to solve these people's problems. Mm-hmm. Like this one particular woman, had this completely disastrous kitchen. And you always walk in and say, wow, what a nice view. You always start with something positive because they're nervous.
Right.
They're embarrassed.
Yeah.
And so you get past the nice view, and she said, you know, she wanted her kitchen reorganized, which we did. But you also sit with them and talk about what their needs are. What do you need in your kitchen? What works for you? What do you need? And she says, I need a breakfast drawer. And I said, okay, I have to say, I don't know what that is.
Never heard of that.
Hmm.
And she said,
that there's like diapers?
She said, she's still working on some of her time management skills. And she said that what has come to work for us is to eat breakfast in the car while we drive everybody to school. She was a little ways out in Bend. And so the breakfast drawer was little bowls, little baggies. It was little snack bars. It was dried fruit. It was all of these items that she has selected as appropriate for breakfast. Mm-hmm. So it needed to be by the door. And when they were ready to go, they open the breakfast drawer, they pull out the things they need, and they leave.
She didn't want to cook for her.
I think cooking was totally off the table.
Not, there's no time.
No.
Good pun.
Sorry.
It seems like a good way to start with that would be to just almost like take everything out of the kitchen,
of course,
and then like walk through a day or something and then add things to the kitchen as you find out what you need throughout the day.
Each one has to be approached uniquely, but that is the best method. Is whatever space you're working on to completely empty it and to sort everything as you're doing it. Hopefully, and as you're going along, they'll find things they no longer need or want or use.
Or they have five of.
Oh, the winner was the 12 ice cream scoops.
12 ice cream scoops in one person's house.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So once you've pulled out everything, then you sort through and remove the stuff you're not going to use. Then you figure out a plan to put it back so it's easy to put away. It's easy to find. Mm-hmm. It works for you and your family, because I'll make suggestions like, how about you keep these things here? Oh, I can't because. Mm-hmm. Okay, you think. And I said, well, how about if we do this? No, I can't because. And then you come up with the third item and they go, oh, that's perfect. And they're happy. And
So it's almost like you're doing some coaching, sort of.
It is, in a way. And my boss also was a life coach.
Yeah, I was going to say life coach.
Yeah,
boss was too. She was trained to do that. And the person that hires you to organize their kitchen without being there, we would do it because they would pay us to do it. But
they wouldn't be in the room?
Right. I thought that was the worst case scenario. Mm.
I didn't think you did that. I thought you only did it with people there.
If they ask for it and they're willing to pay the price at the time, we would do it.
So is there a strategy for kind of, let's say you have everything in place and they like their setup. Did you have a strategy for keeping it maintained?
We did offer like a checkup service. Do you want me to check with you in 3 months or 6 months? And yeah. We'll come back and say, well, this isn't working. We need to address this. Or I can't get myself to put that there. And you can, you know, adjust. Make adjust. We did offer that if they wanted.
That's fascinating.
It was fascinating.
I think I would enjoy that kind of work, too.
Like, it was, help organizing?
Yeah.
It was very fun. And it was hard work. And it was challenging. And I just loved it. But the economy pretty much knocked it out. People are saying, what? $85 an hour? I can't afford that.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty pricey.
It's kind of worth it, though. Get rid of 11 of those scoops.
Yeah. How much ice cream is Shiva coming over to scoop ice cream?
Maybe two.
Yeah, two max.
One for the road, one
one in a backup. I don't know.
Yeah, one's in the dishwasher. You got a backup.
One's in the ice cream in the freezer, just ready to go.
Just have one in a holster at all times, just in case. For an
ice cream emergency.
You never know.
Or mayonnaise.
Oh.
We'll get to that.
Should we? Oh, no, okay. Oh.
I mean, if you have 50 flavors of mayonnaise, you might want more than one scoop. Scooper. You mayonnaise might. Scooper.
It was work I really enjoyed. There was a lot of really unusual situations. Like one time I went into a kitchen and the people had just moved in and all the boxes marked kitchen were in the kitchen. And she said, just go ahead and unpack it. And she left. Mm. So I opened the first box, it's full of dishes. So I didn't know if there was more boxes of dishes or that was it. So I had to open every single box.
Yeah.
Spread it all over the house to figure out how much there was of stuff. Mm-hmm. And she says, oh, I went through everything at the old place. All you have to do is put it away. So I did, but it took a long time.
Did everything fit?
Well, yeah. Hmm. Made it fit. Hmm. And then I put Post-its on every cupboard. So if you're looking for a glass or a dish or a pot, eventually you'll learn where they are. And then by then the Post-its will probably fallen off anyway.
Yeah.
So unpacking moves was challenging. Hmm.
Now it seems like you got a lot of reward out of helping people. Can you think of kind of a scenario that would be where you really got a need met for contributing, where it really worked to help somebody, like it felt good to you?
Oh, they all felt good. Hmm. When we're all finished, I've had people look at me and burst into tears. They were just so happy and grateful. I never thought it could look like this.
Hmm.
I never knew it was possible.
I was telling Drew the other day that sometimes it's easier to get motivated to clean someone else's room than it is to clean your own room, you know?
Yeah, and to touch on that a little bit is, you know, if you're trying to approach these kind of projects on your own, it's so much better with a buddy.
Mm.
Because as you're trying to sort through things, it's better to have someone else show you the 12 ice cream scoops and say something like, which one would you like to keep?
Yeah.
Rather than ask them what they want to get rid of. Because if they think about getting rid of stuff, they get upset.
Mm.
And if you let them touch them, just the sense of touching it now makes you feel like you still want it and still own it. So if someone's helping you and saying, which one of these would you like to keep? And they pick this one. And so these are going to go. Okay.
Yeah. Huh. Now, hoarding, you dealt with some, quote, hoarding.
Yeah.
Some pack rats.
Yeah.
If they were too far gone, I mean, we were not psychologists.
Hmm.
We knew when we got to the level where we would not be helpful.
Hmm.
And Julie usually took over, and we usually tried to arrange to get someone more professional to help them.
Someone with a license and insurance to come in and help them out.
Yeah, and give them and counsel them because they're definitely dealing with a disease.
Hmm.
Hmm. Cool. What is the disease? Do you know?
Hoarding.
Just hoarding. Is that
hoarding disease?
That's a real thing.
If you could, if there was something that you think you could like sum up for some of the joy that you got and some of the ways you helped people and things you liked about it. Was there anything you'd maybe have in a message sense for people trying to organize themselves now? Like if someone now is listening and they want to organize, can you give them some help?
Well, like just kind of do the basic steps we talked about is pulling everything out. Like say your closet, put every stitch of clothing, every shoe, suitcase, Christmas present, whatever's in there, put it on the bed. Now you're committed to doing it because you can't go to bed unless you do.
Good.
Sort through with a friend. A friend is really helpful if you don't have a professional to help you.
Mm.
Put back things that you really enjoy. And another question I've asked clients where they've looked at me and said, oh, I never thought of it that way. It's life-changing. Mm. I'll show them this item and they'll say, not say, do you want to keep it, but here it is. And they, oh, I don't know. Somebody gave it to me. And I said, this item here I'm holding, if you were walking through a store and had a price tag on it, would you buy it? Yeah. They go, no.
Hmm.
Okay, there's your answer.
Yeah, good one.
If you are not going to buy that today, you don't really want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice answer. That was really good. Thanks, Mom.
Sure.
Now, I would love to keep you on the show for lots and lots of more time, but I understand you have prior engagements you need to get to. So I would like to thank you very much for the time that you have, and I know you guys got other things you got to do.
Yeah. Thanks for stopping by. Today's show is brought to you by Final Corp. With over 50 years of experience, Final Corp is constantly breaking new culinary ground with their selection of unique and interesting mayonnaise flavors, including Poison Ivy, Baby Diaper, Stripper, and Rotting Butterscotch. Thanks again, Final Corp, for supporting us.
Yeah, thanks, Final Corp.
Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that was their cheerier one.
Yeah.
They actually sent us a song that had a little, it was a little darker than that one, and we got them to agree to this one.
They're pretty flexible over there at Final Corp.
Yeah.
Did you have a topic you wanted to bring in?
Yeah. Well, the holiday, the last two, yesterday's holiday.
Yesterday was 420.
It was 420 yesterday.
Kind of dating the show here, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're recording on Thursday here.
You see it. Okay. You see, all right. You saw us.
Yeah. We're outed.
And
they got us.
So 420, I want to talk a little about that holiday, and also the maybe also the bicycle day.
Hitler's birthday. And Columbine.
And
anniversary.
Earth Day. But the way people use it here in the Bay Area,
yeah,
when they say that, they mean marijuana day.
Ah. Now, you know a little, maybe know more than I do about this. It's called also called Bicycle Day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not what you think,
it's
right?
Not, it's not. Bicycle Day is...
What does that mean?
It means it's April 19th.
Oh, April 19th.
Mm-hmm. Day before 420.
Okay.
So it's like these two lovely holidays. And Bicycle Day is about the time when, I forget the gentleman's name, but he first got LSD into doses to which that it would be... observable from human senses, and decided to ride his bike home from the lab.
This is the inventor of LSD?
No, or? This is someone synthesizing it, I believe.
Ah,
in,
okay.
I believe, Berkeley in the 60s.
Huh.
And rode his bike home and had quite a journey, apparently, on acid on his bicycle, and it was dubbed Bicycle Day.
Now, quite a, like he didn't make it home straight away, or he took some wrong turns, or just...
You know, actually, I'm not familiar with the story of how it goes, but it I believe the kind of the general ethos is that it's that like it was a wild ride home. He made it, but it was had some, you know,
had some experiences,
some experiences on the way.
Mm.
Yeah,
cool. I've never taken acid and ridden my bike. Have you?
I've not taken acid and ridden my bike. I would do it. I would do it under certain circumstances.
Hmm.
If it was like, maybe there were...
Like in the desert?
Yeah.
A certain like time of year?
Yeah, not streets. Not like traffic.
A certain stretch of 9 days in the late summer, let's say. Maybe in the desert. That would be...
I might do it there.
Yeah,
I might go there for. I might do. I might take acid and ride a bicycle there. Because I mean, if you're out in the desert, you're just gonna fall over in the dust. I mean, that's
right.
You can't go off a cliff or jump into a tree. That's just it. You can't go very fast because it's all soft.
Yeah, I guess you could get run over by an art car or something.
Yeah,
but probably low odds of that.
I think there should maybe it would be cool if you had lights all over you for this. So then if you fell over and fell asleep, you'd still have lights on.
Yeah, or just have training wheels so you just don't fall over.
There you go. Nice.
That's actually kind of a good idea. Just have a bike with training wheels for Burning Man.
And a back. So you don't fall off of it.
Oh, so you can lean back like a captain's chair?
Like lean back.
Oh, yeah. Man, that'd be great. Armrests.
Mm-hmm. Armrests to lead up to the controls.
How do you dustproof your bike? I mean, you don't bring your prime bike. You have a backup bike.
You bring the backups, yeah.
For Burning Man.
Yeah.
Now, what What does the dust mess up on the bike?
It kind of clings to the oils that are exposed, like both on the chain and on the sprockets. And that causes clumping, first off, but also corrosion.
Hmm.
Yeah. On the metals.
Interesting.
Like the, yeah. Pretty corroding.
Okay. Let's see.
So, the holiday.
The holiday.
The holiday 420.
Yeah.
And let us commence this holiday by the after eve of the holiday by enjoying a delightful partakement. That was smooth, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was interesting word usements that you structure.
Thank you.
Hmm.
Hmm, that tastes great.
Did you do anything special for 420?
Yeah, I rode out on my bike.
Cool.
And I went to BPG, also known as Berkeley Patients Group, and there was a big line.
Of course.
But they were cool. They had like free food and things. And when you got in, there was a bunch of freebies and there was discounts on stuff, and it was cool. So I did that.
The one in Berkeley? The one in San Pablo?
The one on San Pablo in Berkeley.
Is there only one of BPG?
I believe so.
Yeah.
No, there's like another office I ran into, but I don't think they sell cannabis there. So we went there, and that was cool. Then I went to the Berkeley Marina, and it was empty. Brought the dogs out and my staff and spun around the staff as we walked, and it was basically empty. No one was there.
That was yesterday?
Uh-huh.
What time did you go down to Marina?
Like 2?
Okay. Because I was down there.
Oh.
Like 5 or something.
Oh, about
6.
That.
Taking a walk. What is that banging sound? Sounds like pots and pans in the background, in the distance.
Well, if we find out, we'll post it. So, yeah, so we did that, and then we came home, and we actually went to the nursery, bought a bunch of seeds and plants and things, and worked on the garden a bunch.
Nice.
And then went over to Seven Stars right about at 420, and nothing was going on. They didn't have any discounts or freebies or nothing. I was like, oh, shoot.
Now, you say you and Rebecca?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's Seven Stars?
Seven Stars is a cannabis dispensary. It's very near my home in Richmond.
Oh, that's the one in the mall?
Yeah, it's right here. The Asian mall. They're great, and they have, I mean, they're totally great. I was surprised, though. They weren't doing anything.
They're just another day.
They were just busy.
Huh.
I was like, huh. Because BPG was like all this free stuff. I was like, huh, I thought that was kind of the thing.
Oh, BPG's kind of the best, huh?
I guess so. So far, you know.
As far as we know.
I reluctantly agree because I'm like, I went in there and I was talking to the manager about legalization and they're against it. And I'm like, really? You think all those people should go to prison? And they're like, ha, ha, ha. And I was like, well, it's of course economical. And so that's too bad. And yet they do a really good job. So I don't know. It's kind of mixed.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah. Isn't it?
I would have thought that they would be for it, but
they're not.
Maybe because, I don't know, maybe there's more money in regulating it, restricting it and regulating it.
The holiday is really fun. I really enjoyed the holiday. There's like a lot of, I have the experience of a lot of camaraderie and sharing and rejoicing this plant. And I think it's really cool. It's fun to ride around. I really enjoy riding my bicycle with my friend Cannabis. I think it's a pretty cool combo. I mean, if you've never smoked before and then you just want to jump on your bike and smoke, I think you'll crash probably.
If you've never smoked marijuana in your life?
Yeah, and then you smoke it and then jump on a bicycle, that's probably going to be a problem. But if you're a regular, I don't know, it's helmets or, you know, habits. Helmets.
Yeah, habits.
Habits.
Habits, just to remind all our listeners, is a very handy mnemonic device to help you to remember to be safe on your bicycle. Habits: helmet, air, brakes, illumination, tidiness, and seat height. So when you get on your bike, just remember habits.
And see, for me,
oh, brakes. Did I say brakes?
You did.
Okay.
For me, illumination, I have a double meaning for that. Because, of course, I mean my head and tail lights, but I also sometimes mean illumination, like mood illumination.
Mm.
Illuminate the mood. Let's go riding.
Brighten the corners.
Brighten the corners.
Whing.
We are... Cool. Hey, what do you think about this?
Yeah.
We might be filming a show soon.
Who?
You and I.
Oh, yeah. We got some stuff in the works here, guys.
Maybe we talk about it for a minute.
Yeah, we're going to do a bike trip coming up, and we're going to try to put it together into a nice little video package that'll be both informative and entertaining. And, yeah, it's going to be Bike Order Warriors. That's the name that we've chosen. So it should be kind of fun. This is kind of our first go at this. We're going to try to do a bunch of filming while we do a bunch of pedaling.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, keep an eye out for that. We'll probably post a link to it next episode or this episode when we release this one. So
on this website, for sure.
On the website, for sure.
You'll see it.
And Empathy and Imagination is on iTunes now.
Yeah.
For free.
You can get it for free.
Yeah. So even if you don't support Bernie Sanders, there's still shit you can get for free, like our podcast.
Badoo-boo.
It's on iTunes, so check it out. And also check out our website, empathyandimagination.com. Thanks. Dancing. How about dancing?
Dancing.
You like dancing?
I love dancing.
Dancing is one of those things, it's like laughing, sex, and dancing. They all just make you feel good.
Hmm.
Is there anything else we need in life besides those three things? Maybe food, water, air, companionship, meaning.
Yeah. But, I mean, as far as, like, physical activities, those are pretty good.
Yeah. And dancing, you know, I've never been a huge dancer.
Mm-hmm.
Did you dance? Did you go to prom or semi-formals or anything in high school?
My high school, we booked a prom, but then it was canceled because there wasn't enough people going. So.
It's weak.
Yeah. That's what happened.
Homecoming queen. Never mind. What about semi-formals or like, you know, the dance?
When I was like middle school.
Middle school, yeah. Did you dance? Uh-huh. I didn't.
I danced.
I didn't. I stayed on the sidelines.
Acting cool?
No, acting insecure. Uh-huh. Not even acting, just being insecure. Dancing. Didn't dance at the prom. Don't really dance at weddings. Although, you know, I don't know. If I have a couple beers, I loosen up, tend to dance. And it's always fun, and I always get compliments.
You're a good dancer.
And part of it's like just not, you gotta kind of get out of your head.
Mm-hmm.
And don't try to ape a certain style. You know, don't try to imitate a certain style. And don't be too insecure. Just kind of follow your, free your mind and your body will follow, right? Mm-hmm. Right, Steve Martin? That's right.
Dancing to me really meets a need. I've been dancing since I was a little kid. I am of the opinion that I'm actually an all right dancer. I have that opinion about myself.
That's a fair assessment, I think.
Okay, right on. And I've been told that, oh yeah, Drew, you know, you're a good dancer. It's like, I'm a big guy and I can move it around all right, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I think you have good kinesthetic awareness. You have a good awareness of your body.
Hmm.
Like you and I both have that.
Yeah. I think so too. Thanks.
Maybe it's from, I don't know what it's from anything, but maybe that's why I skateboarded too.
Yeah, I think skateboarding and I trampolined a lot as a kid. Mm. So I think that actually has to do, both of those are major foot balance ratio change, you know.
Any slam dancing in your...
You know, I attempted break a little bit in the day, maybe like later middle school when I was like grinding on my rollerblades and stuff. You know how cool I was.
What is it? Break?
Break dancing? I don't know. Slam.
Oh, break dancing.
Isn't slam an offshoot of break dancing?
Nope.
No. Oh.
No, like slam dancing is like mosh pit.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Hardcore. I mean, you're into...
Oh, dude, I've crushed souls in the mosh pit.
I was going to say, yeah. Crushed souls and skulls. You're into black metal.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, moshed at lots of metal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's dancing.
And that's dancing. And, there's kind of an etiquette.
There's several dances available.
In moshing.
Mm-hmm.
Don't throw any elbows, you know, mm-hmm. Don't be a dick and throw elbows and punches. And someone falls down, you help them. And growing up in Boston, I was into the hardcore scene when I was a skater. Used to go to a lot of shows and do a lot of moshing. And even though it seems so violent, there was a lot of camaraderie kind mm-hmm. of in that scene.
There's something about the gray area between like fighting and hugging
mm-hmm.
that mosh pits sort of are. That's sort of like a brotherly release or friendly kind of like, I don't know. It's a way of sharing that's vulnerable with also it being violent, kind of.
Yeah.
It's weird because there are also rules like if the show gets large enough, you can have gender segregated pits. And now the rules are girls may enter the guys' pits. Guys may not enter the girls' pits.
Interesting.
And no one has to tell anybody. That's just what happens.
It just happens that way. Yeah.
If there's a girl pit, every guy knows. If you go in there and start punching girls, everybody's going to punch you.
Yeah. Just don't be a dick. It's easy.
And so there's rules like girl can jump in and doesn't matter and that there isn't a gender rule normally, but if a girl, there's girl only pits too. And so
I've never encountered that, yeah. But that's interesting.
It's cool. I mean, having been at a lot of metal shows and played a lot of metal shows, I've moshed my heart out and I would call it ecstatic dance.
Mm-hmm.
It really is ecstatic dance in just another way than the folks who use that term now use it.
It almost reminds me of, what is it? Capoeira?
Capoeira, something
like dancing that sort of crosses over with martial arts a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you know. Did you ever stage dive?
But it was not like run, jump in the air. It's more like kind of lean over fall. And then you're caught,
fall over,
and then they carry you around, and that's cool. And I've also been like done the carrying, and sometimes you get a foot in the head, you know.
No, yeah, yeah.
It just. You can't, you know.
There's a lot more. You'll have a lot more success getting carried if you're a woman jumping into the
stage. Yeah, just jump up, have somebody pick you up, and then everyone will carry you.
What was the largest metal show that you went to where there were two pits?
Oh,
do you remember?
Well, I went to Dima Borgir at the House of Blues with Unearth.
Huh.
And
a couple of popular blues bands.
Yeah. And it was
black blues.
It was cool. There was like the hardcore and the black metal, which is two genres I really enjoy playing in the same. And I was like, yeah, and that was cool.
Hmm.
And then I've been to big stuff like out in the what's that venue? The Mountain View, and there's Shoreline Amphitheater.
Shoreline, yeah.
Yeah, that's just acres and acres of stages and stuff.
Yep. I saw Steely Dan there.
There you go.
Didn't mosh at that show.
I saw Deftones.
Wasn't much of a mosh pit at Steely Dan.
Steely Dan, no. You're more like scuffing your feet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're doing the shuffle.
Yep.
Yeah. But we saw Deftones, Foo Fighters, different shows there. It was cool. I remember with Foo Fighters, they were pushed out later because there was like technical delays and other bands were slower, and so they were going to cut their set short. And they're like, nope, fuck that. We're just going to play everything fast. And they fucking no breaks in between, played everything super fast, made it all happen, jammed it in. It was like.
That's pretty cool.
Fuck yeah.
So like they sped up the tempos of certain
songs? They sped
up
the tempos and there were no breaks in between. And they finished their set. And it was like, thank you guys.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So yeah, I support them for that.
Foo Fighters. That was like a World War II reference, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, dancing, breakdancing. I guess I sort of had a glancing relationship with breakdancing.
Did you really?
But not. I never got good. I never practiced. It was kind of like tried a few things and was like, oh, I'm just not that good. Never mind.
What'd you find? What did you like?
What did I like?
Yeah, what dancing was like? Yeah, that feels good.
Oh, I mean, aside from breakdancing? Just like almost like pantomime dancing. Like acting out scenarios, you know, like, oh, I'm typing on the typewriter and doing office work. And
also shuffling your feet?
Yeah, I mean, I would dance as if I was performing something, some other task that wasn't dancing. Like, oh, I'm going through a filing cabinet, and you know, cause, so that way you kind of create a little story and framework for your dancing, and that's I think how I got comfortable with dancing.
Huh. Nice.
And I remember in college that was, I think it was on acid actually, and my friend Elliot and I were at this show on campus, and yeah, we were just kind of playing off each other's dancing. But we're kind of pantomiming and acting out these little scenes, like, "Oh, I'm a scuba diver," or "I'm swimming."
And were you guys alone or in a public place?
We're in a public place. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. But that was helpful to kind of break down the you know, insecurity or whatnot.
Seems like a good tool.
Yeah. You know, pretend you're swimming or pretend you're doing something else, but act out those motions on the dance floor. You know, don't try to be MC Hammer or whatever.
Yeah.
Just whatever feels good to you, embrace that.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. There's some imagination for you right there.
Mm. Empathize with yourself.
Mm-hmm. Very important. Empathize with yourself, yeah.
And I don't know, what other kind of, were you a break dancer?
You know, I can do a little of the pop and lock now.
Hmm.
And I can slide my feet directions. I don't know. I mean, sure, there's a moon possibility walking, but like, I think what I like to do now is kind of with the sort of kind of a little bit pop and lock, but also kind of moving without looking like it's very smooth, but also very controlled.
Did you have a group of friends who like a little group of people who,
no.
Like, didn't carry around your own piece of cardboard and call yourself the Floor Warriors or anything?
I would have, but no, none of my friends growing up in high school liked dancing. And before that, I was dancing, but it was just mostly jumping around. I didn't, you know,
yeah,
wasn't much going on.
Yeah.
But now, no, now that I think about it, it does sound fun if I could, like, join a little dance group, right?
Mm. Yeah.
I'd do all right.
And actually, just thinking about it just now, I realized that a lot of modern dancing is in fact pantomiming the sexual act, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's like doing these kind of motions that could be interpreted as sexual. Thrusting the hips, so forth. But yeah, dancing, it's like therapeutic. And it's exercise.
It's like laughter-size.
Just like sex and laughs.
And sex is kind of like dancing sometimes, too.
Oh, totally. I mean, I've never had sex, so I don't know.
Yeah, but totally. I mean,
but allegedly. Allegedly, it's a lot like dancing.
I have had sex, and I'll let you know. Sometimes if it can be a little like dancing.
Hmm. It's true. I mean, with sex, too, you got to get out of your head, right?
Yeah, I get out of your head.
Oh, how's it going? Is it going okay?
Yeah, just shut up and get out of your head. You know, it's an awkward thing. That's just a fact. Deal with it.
And then the more you do it, it becomes less awkward.
Yeah. True.
I really think some things need practice. It's weird. I used to think that information could come and then you would just learn it, and it would snap into your life, and there'd be no problems. But it's really, I'm finding for myself, I learned something cool and new. I have to practice doing it awkwardly
mm-hmm.
a bunch, and yeah. Then it's not as awkward, and then I can just do the cool new thing.
Yeah, put it into operation and let it fail. It's the only way that you can really gauge progress, you know?
Yeah.
For me, too. It's like, if you want to get better at singing, you know, turn your mic up all the way, and let everyone else in the band suffer. And guess what? You'll probably get better pretty quickly. Quicker than if you didn't do that. And it's like, you know, vulnerability and practice. Get better. And even, you know, there's some things that you can't physically practice, like thoughts, like critical thinking, but you can still practice them.
You can practice critical thinking, I think. Yeah, Is that what you said?
Yeah, I just mean it's not a physical act. It's more of a, you know, mental practice.
We could create one, I bet. Like, if we could go like, okay, well, here's this box, and inside this box has
Yeah, like a thought experiment. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I just mean like there's mental practice just as much as there's physical practice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Inside my head, practicing. Yeah.
And like faking, you know.
Fake till you make?
Fake till you make sort of helps, I think.
If I commit.
Or like not, I mean, you know.
It's like if I commit that I can do something and I start faking it till I can make it, it's like it's, at first, the faking it is way big. But the second time you fake it, it's like it's cut in half.
Yeah. Or like faking or acting, whatever you want to call it. Like learning a language. If you kind of pretend that you're from the country of the language that you're trying to learn, it like helps, you know? Or like, I'm going to act like I'm Spanish while I'm learning Spanish. It actually helps. Helped me, anyway.
See?
I'm not fluent, but it helped me to like kind of turn a corner on some of that stuff.
I think it's empathy. I think you expressing empathy for yourself and the people you want to interact with in this new way.
Right. And imagining that you're part of it already.
Nice. You know,
kind of like tricking yourself, playing games on yourself, but in a good way, you know. So yeah, dancing too. Just get out of your head. Don't be so insecure. I know it's hard to just say don't be so insecure, but wouldn't it be cool if you weren't so insecure? And I think that's part of the key to kind of letting go, you know, for dancing, at least.
I agree. Yeah. That sounds nice.
Dancing.
Thank you.
Cool. I think an hour is good.
Yeah. Should we do a little?
Oh, do we have a question of the episode?
Oh, let's do a question. We have to do two questions. We didn't have one last time. Fuck.
Yeah, I think I made one up for last time though.
Okay.
Maybe. Yeah. Your mom had a good question.
Well, her like sort organizing of things.
Yeah. What was her
organizing advice was awesome.
Yeah, that was cool. I don't know. Do you have any questions?
It's more of like, okay, let me just talk for a minute and see if it pops out. We can cut this out or keep it in. Who cares?
Of course, yeah.
So thinking about this political climate and what is occurring, what you think's occurring, it seems very entertaining and. It's not like it's some mastermind's idea that they're creating this all with one puppeteering hand to have us all believe we're really controlled by some evil dictator. It's like it's that entertaining because each individual thing has its own hyperly similar to the other group's goal of more and more and more and more and more. And any ideology that is constant growth cannot be sustained. So the question is, all this entertainment, what solutions is it solving? It proposes it will, but if you look at the numbers between what is promised and what occurs, just say the last 10 presidents, you can kind of guess about what you can get from what they're saying. And then extrapolate that outward in your lifetime. How many years does that mean the percentage of what actually occurs, they're saying, lingers around 20%. somewhere in there actually occurs.
There's that 80-20 again.
Yeah. So then you calculate the rest of how much time you have in your life, and you go, okay, how much longer is 20% going to work for me?
Yeah.
How much longer before I want to think about something else? Just the whole socioeconomic thing. Like, maybe we got to think outside this whole system.
Okay. Now, maybe we can put that into a question. Like, how much longer do you think the socioeconomic system is going to last? How about that? Is that a good question?
I like that.
Something?
I mean, yes and.
Yeah.
How much more of your life do you want to get 20% back of the promises, the presidents that go in and produce? How many more 4-year chunks do you want to get 20% of what you're promised?
Mm, there you go. It's a good one. Provocative.
You got it.
Probably divisive question. Cool. I think you nailed it on that one. All right, yeah. It was a tidy little episode. Yeah. Thanks for supporting the show, everybody. Please feel free to visit empathyandimagination.com to comment on the question of the episode, and if you feel like it, to suggest future topics. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks so much. Drew Clark here. I'd like to acknowledge you for taking the time to listen to this episode.
See you next time.